The Chinese Football Podcast, brought to you by Wild East Football.
Hello, and welcome to the Chinese Football Podcast, brought to you by Wild East Football. It's eight straight at the top of the table, and there's plenty for us to get stuck into with both the league and cup proceedings to look back on. So we're going to jump right into things this week. I am your host, as always, Steve Crooks, joined by our regular expert, Brandon Chemers, back safely in Beijing, I believe, Brandon?
Safely and happily, yes, Steve. It's a good week.
And sounding a little hoarse as well, and I'm sure we'll get onto a discussion of why. And Cameron Wilson in Shanghai. How are you doing this week, Cam?
Yeah, Steve, not bad. Good to be back.
Well, we previewed the game last week, and there really is only one place to start, I suppose. That big table-topping clash. Guan continuing their winning streak at the start of the season. Brandon, how much of a message do you think that the 1-0 win down at Tianhe sends out to the competition?
Well, it's a great start. Obviously, they've started out well this month, winning the CFA Cup, winning that one to the match against Junbuk tomorrow night. We're recording on Monday, so that will be equally important. And then the SIPG match towards the end of the month. But it's a big win. It's been a long time since they've last won at Tianhe. It was a very dramatic match, a lot of back and forth, a lot of chances for each side. And so a victory does sort of send a message. We talked about SIPG in previous years, you know, going down there and winning and breaking that curse. And I think for Guan, this could be something we definitely look back on as one of the big wins that hopefully leads them into the title.
A big statement win for sure, and an absolutely lovely goal to win it. It must be said, some great one-touch football kind of in and around the box. Cam, in general, how was the standard this year, do you think? Because we've spoken a bit about certainly issues that Evergrande have and whether the rules and regulations are hamstringing CSL sides a bit. This is generally one of those big fixtures that we look to as a bit of a bellwether to the standard of the league. Did it live up to billing this year?
Yeah, I think it did. I mean, it's always been a pretty good fixture over the years, Evergrande Guan, for quite some time. And certainly before SIPG won the league, that was the kind of big fixture, one of the big fixtures in the league. And to that extent, I think it was pretty good. It was a good game. Guan, I think, were the deserved winners. I think for the first time I can remember, I mean, Guan on paper has a much better side than Evergrande. And I think that was a big part of it.
Yeah, especially with the injury to Talisca. As you say, when you look at the lineups, Guan definitely went into it the stronger. Brandon, for you, who were the key players and the standout performers in this game?
There wasn't anyone that really played badly. I'd like to pass out a lot of credit all over the place. Again, we talked about Zhou Dehai last week, and he came up with a couple of really big saves in the right place at the right time. Chi Zhongguo really was all over the place, and also Kim Min-jae at the back was very important. But and of course, you can't really look past the two in the midfield that combined for that goal, Renato Augusto and Jonathan Vieira. I think all of those guys really have put in an absolutely excellent performance.
Yeah, impressive stuff from the men in green. Looking good at the top of the table there. I'm sure we'll get to talk about them a lot more over the season. And I do want to spend a bit of time talking through Evergrande and what this means for them. But before we do that, one other game that I think has to be reflected on from the weekend, some absolute madness up in Tianjin. This for me is maybe the entertainment of the weekend for the neutral. Tianhai go 2-0 down at home to Chongqing. They go 3-2 ahead in the 90th minute. I think even with an own goal, and they still managed to make a couple of kind of controversial under 23 subs, get one of them sent off and concede an equaliser. Cam, where do we even start with this one?
I don't know. It was a pretty mad game. It just shows that, you know, the entertainment can come from anywhere in the CSL. Not always for the right reasons, but yeah, I just don't know what to say. It was a strange one.
But Brandon, you're kind of our professional defender of Tianhai and their management team. They do concede a lot of very late goals this year. Do you think that's a cause for concern up there?
They're a wild team. I don't think they're as bad as a lot of people sort of thought they were at the start of the season. They have a pretty decent team, but at the same time, it's Shen Xiangfu football, so anything sort of goes.
I think there may be more goals in this version of Shen Shangwu football than he ever managed in his time in Shanghai. But again, moving on swiftly from that, I wanted actually, Cam, to come back to one of the questions that came in on the mailbag, regular listener Roy Tadmore. Two-part question this. Are we going for the most boring title race in years? And also, because I know this is a particular favourite topic of yours, how come no coach has been sacked yet? This is quite a long way into the season for everyone to still be in a job.
Yeah, I guess it is. I'd need to look at the record books, but usually by this point, someone's already gone. We're talking about Stankovic at Arnef. His coat is on a shugly peg, as they say back home, but he's still fighting fit. So it's pretty unusual. I don't know what's going to happen as regards that. I'd be surprised if the CSL still had its full complement of original coaches the start of the season with by the time the summer break comes, or at least the middle of the season, the summer. But I don't know. As for the second part of the question, I mean, I predicted before the season that Guan would win. We've explained that in the last couple of pods. To go over again, I just think the quality of player Guan signed is probably the main reason behind that. And of course, the relative decline in Evergrande and SIPG, the main title contenders, or they'll be the competitors of Guan, they're not as strong as they were last year. Having said that, not so long off having seen Evergrande win 7 years in a row. So at the end of the day, it's looking like it's going to be a different team wins it again this year. So at the end, after all said and done, that's not really a bad thing. I also said last week that by the time the summer transfer window opens, it might be too late for the other teams to catch Guan. And certainly at this stage, after this big victory for Guan over Evergrande, that looks like a more likely possibility than it was this time last week.
I would just say, I think traditionally, if you go back over the past couple seasons, other than I think last year when there are a couple firings in early April, you usually start to see the firings begin the first week or so of May. So, and I have there's a lot of managers on the hot seat right now, so I have a feeling that keep watching this space. You'll start to see changes being made in the next week or two for a number of sides.
That's good for us because we never get bored of talking about managers and you know, who can come in, what the rumour mill's saying and so on. I do think it's worth pointing out on both of those points, actually, that we're not quite a third of the way into the season yet as well. So although Guan are imperious at this point, you know, the other sides aren't too far behind. So I don't think we're going to be crowning them as kind of confirmed winners just yet. There's plenty of a ways to go. But one team that you know, you spoke, Cam, about how they'd won the league so many times in a row, they really don't look to be in serious contention again this year, is Evergrande. We've got into this a little bit in a few pods this year, but it's probably as good a time as any to really flesh out our kind of appraisal of what's happening there. This is fascinating for me because I don't know where to begin with it. These guys, for many, many years, were revered as the most professional and dominant and big spending side in Asia. And look, from the outside looking in, they just seem to be in a state of managed decline at this point, really. They used to have top draw foreign players, World Cup winning coaches, most of the Chinese national team in the squad, and they're just kind of aging and slowly not quite patching up these gaps. Are we all getting a bit too excited about kind of the witch being dead, Brandon? Or do you really see any way that they're going to recover from this kind of not particularly graceful slide that they're on?
Well, I think that they're sort of in the midst of a transition. The big issue, obviously, it comes down to the foreigners. And, you know, they, again, we're it's sort of like last year when we were sort of talking about, you know, Evergrande is dead and everything, but they're still in that near the top of the table. They're still not that many points off. They still, you know, played Guan extremely tight. Even without Talisca, who's been their talisman for the past year, basically. So you can't be too negative about them. They do have basically all of the future of the Chinese national team in their side with their young players. They have at least five or six guys who are going to be the future of the national team. So I think of course, we're going to get to their foreigner policy, but I think that's sort of where it really comes down to, is that this year, for whatever reason, they didn't really choose to reload when it comes to foreigners. They brought in Park Ji-soo, who is decent enough, but is also relatively unproven. And so it's not really that big a surprise they're choosing to play sort of the younger Chinese guys like or even keeping Feng Xiaoting in the sides of the older players as well over Park Ji-soo. And so I think what it really comes down to is their foreigner policy.
Yeah, Cam, I know this is a particular, you know, bugbear of yours, the two foreigner policy. I mean, we can see how damaging it is to their chances. What I find fascinating is that the foreigners they have brought in, as Brandon said, are kind of, you know, centre-backs who aren't good enough to get into their team and not really where they have weaknesses anyway. What do you think? I mean, you've mentioned that there's potentially political motivations behind this. I mean, do you want to expand on that? And could there be any footballing reasons to trying to load up with young Chinese players and at the expense of their kind of traditional South American imports?
Well, I mean, they've brought in some players, Chinese players, who are, as Brandon said, they are going to be Chinese national team regulars in the future. Guys like Zhang Xiaowei, He Chao, they are pretty decent young players, but whether they are better than the outgoing generation remains to be seen, I think. So from that point of view, some of the signings are perfectly logical. And that is, in keeping with what we've seen Evergrande do before, is kind of snap up some of the best domestic talent from elsewhere. But it comes back to the foreigner policy. It's difficult to get away from. I mean, they've got this self-imposed limit of only using two foreigners. Now, even if they were using three foreigners, the transfers they made in the last window were kind of head-scratchers, to say the least. I mean, if you look at all the CSL clubs, very few, I think, of all the CSL clubs, I think Guan, Shandong and Jiangsu, I think, have a foreign centre-back. There might be one or two more. But basically, most of the CSL clubs load up with four either forwards or a creative midfielder or sometimes a holding midfielder. Basically, no one's got two foreign defenders, except Evergrande. I think that's just such a strange policy, even looking apart from the two foreigner limit. I just can't really understand that from a footballing point of view. And also, I mean, they signed the Peruvian Suecho, who is apparently going to be naturalised Chinese, but he's like a midfielder or like a kind of forward midfielder of some kind, and he's been loaned out to Shenzhen. I mean, and also in the last window they let Alan go on loan to Tenerheim, and Alan, he scored like something like 15 goals in the second half of the season, or 15 goals in 16 games last year. So I mean, in this game against Guan, the last match, they could have, if they still had Alan on the books, he would have been a reasonable replacement for Talisca. But because of the transfer policy and also the foreign player policy, they've just completely hamstrung themselves. Why that is, I mean, I couldn't absolutely say for sure, but Evergrande has a long record of doing things for non-footballing reasons, and it certainly looks like it in this case.
Well, I mean, I think a lot of that goes to the fact that this is sort of a transitionary period for them, and that's why, you know, they want to get in on the sort of naturalization theme, and so they wanted to snap up Browning and Su Chao when they could, and so I think that sort of limited, they don't want them going somewhere else, and right now they count as foreigners, and so that limited sort of their options as to who they could bring in, and maybe it hamstrung them this season, but in the future, theoretically, it's going to be very beneficial for them. Obviously, we can talk about whether, you know, that is their ownership sort of bored with football? Are they not really willing to spend the same amount of money? I mean, we talked a lot about in previous years that, you know, maybe that's sort of what's influencing their decision to want to have an all Chinese side or something, is that the amounts of money they've put into football over the years. So yes, there could be governmental reasons. There could be other reasons. It could be a little of both, for sure. I think there's a lot of factors into it. It's hard sort of parsing it out. But, you know, their domestic signings, they signed five players that are all national team players or future national team players. So they're still Evergrande.
Well, they are a different Evergrande, though. And I mean, it's good to have some perspective, because a bad season for them is going to mean probably coming third, doing okay in the knockout competitions, blooding some of these players for the future. Do you think there's much in the idea they might be getting bored, Cam? I mean, they climbed their mountain multiple times. They won, was it, what, 7 in a row? They won the Champions League twice. There are rumours about how much money they're bleeding and the club's never going to break even. And obviously that has impacts for the transfer tax as well. Do you think it's a half-hearted rebuild or there is case to be optimistic for the future there?
It's an interesting theory. I think that Evergrande from the beginning has always, a dimension of it has always been a political dimension. And to that extent, they've won the CSL 7 years in a row. They actually had a very positive impact on Chinese football in a lot of ways, particularly professionalism, doing things properly. The scouting was pretty good. The increased standards they put upon their players, you know, not putting up with all the kind of amateurish nonsense which has plagued the game in China. But as you say, they've won the ACL twice. They've won the Chinese League 7 years in a row. It's like, what? In a way, there's not that much more for them to achieve. And in that way, Su Jiayin, the chairman, you can see he's now shifting his focus towards actually helping the Chinese team more directly. And that's very much in step with the political wins which have blown in China at the moment. So, yeah, there is a transitional season for them. And there is an element of future building going on in the transfer policy. But I think with Evergrande, politics is never far from the surface.
And yeah, I'll never understand the signing of Browning, that the last thing they need was another centre-back who's not good enough to get in their team. But when he does finally get some minutes, maybe we'll get to evaluate him in a CSL context. Just to wrap this up, I wanted to talk about a corollary to maybe a much more serious situation with Hebei kind of mired in the relegation zone early in the season. There's a microcosm of the Evergrande thing going on there. I mean, admittedly, they're falling faster and falling from a much lower starting point, but they've stopped throwing the money around as well. Brandon, do you think this means that the days of big money spending injections are over?
Yeah, I mean, when we're talking about Hebei for sure, there's already stories coming out of Hebei that the capital is sort of running dry and China Fortune doesn't want to invest as heavily in football.
What an ironic name that would be.
You got to wonder about, you know, we just talked a lot about Evergrande. You got to wonder about Hebei being forced to or whatever. They somehow Gao Zhenyi went from Hebei to Evergrande, and he was by far one of Hebei's best players, was a key player in their side, and now he's on Evergrande. So that was a big loss, and there's a lot of turnover in the offseason and not a lot coming in. And, you know, at the same time, when we talk about foreigners, they brought in El Kabi, the Moroccan striker, halfway through last season, and he really hasn't done very much of anything in the CSL. He's struggled. I mean, I think he had a decent enough season last year, but this year has been pretty weak. And so I think it's for them, I think it's definitely a financial situation there, as well as just so much turnover.
Yeah, Cam, do you think we can... they're one of the teams that's going to have to rename themselves anyway. Hebei China Misfortune, possibly? I mean, we got a question from Patrick, regular question asker as well, in terms of what's gone wrong with Hebei this season. Is it as simple as saying as well that they brought in the man who took Sunderland down from the Championship and he's having a darn good attempt at doing that here in China as well?
I think it's actually a little bit of the Evergrande effect, and the effect we're just talking about, the theory we were just talking about, are they getting bored? I don't think it's bored, but I mean, you got to think about, given that Chinese football, they don't make any money, so why are they doing it? Why are they investing in it? Why are big companies putting all their cash in? It's because they're hoping to get some kind of benefit of some kind, and it's either business or political or a combination of both. And for Hebei, I think the amount they've put in is certainly 2 years ago was, you're talking some really serious money for like Gervinho and Lavezzi and so on. I mean, now they're, I mean, the last signing was like, you know, Andy Russell from the Owning. So, I mean, and as Brandon said, they're letting good players like Gao Zhenyi, who's the best defender, just go to Evergrande. Which in some ways I was really disappointed by that, because I thought the days of all the best Chinese players going to Evergrande were over, unless they were from clubs which have always been selling clubs, for example, like Changchun. So they have sold Hechao to Evergrande. That was kind of expected. But here you have what happened with Hebei and Tianhai is very similar. They're clubs which had a lot of money, but for some reason the investment has been cut and now they've basically sold at least some of their better Chinese players to Evergrande. So I think there's certainly a thread between all these things of Hebei suddenly selling their best players, Tianhai, formerly Chuanzhen, selling their best players. There's probably a common reason, is that somehow the powers who invested in these clubs are either not as interested as they were, or in Chuanzhen's case, they were investigated for financial wrongdoing or whatever it was. And also there's been some murmurings that something similar has been going on with Hebei as well, that their ownership has fallen foul of the authorities in some way. So I think the truth lies in those combination of factors somewhere.
The truth is out there, but as always, it is rather murky. So we're going to turn our attentions to the Cup in the second half of the show. But before that, it's time for everyone's favourite mid-show break section, Phenomenon of the Week.
The Wild East Football Phenomenon of the Week.
And it was a closely fought battle, actually, in the Twitter vote last week. The Shanghai International Port Group bot army was out early and out in strength, but they did get reeled in with Guan winning the vote. Honestly, there's a load of Russian trolls who just exist to vote for Shanghai International Port Group options in this poll. I'm sure of it. Anyway, having said all of that, Guan did win the vote in the end. Ule and that lovely goal coming in second. And just the sole vote, I think, for Shenzhen, unfortunately. Cam, that does mean you get the full field in front of you as you go first this week. There's been a lot happening both on and off the pitch. Who or what has caught your eye as your personal phenomenon of this week?
I'm going to nominate Evergrande's transfer policy last winter. I think the crows have came home to roost with them getting beat, and I'm going to be interested to see if they bother to buy anyone new in the summer window.
The crows coming home to roost. Excellent. I am going to stay with our little discussion theme just now and call out Hebei again for the fact that they have written a letter of apology to their fans for how badly they're doing this year. I haven't seen it yet. I can only hope it's in kind of 8-year-old scrawled handwriting like some of the player apologies we've seen this season. More of those, please. Brandon, are you going to go with a repeat nomination of Guan, or are you going to surprise us this week?
Winning, setting records every week. I kind of want to go with Guan, or at least with the rain in Guangzhou, which I'm finally starting to dry out from. But I guess I'll have to go with, Marek Hamzik, who it seems is already on the outs in Dalian and could be gone by the summer transfer window for a very short stay. I think things are difficult from both sides, the club and from him. And it seems they're not too happy up there.
I'm sure the CFA will be pleased to see the back of his haircut as well.
He is having a kind of Tevez-like impact up there. It's remarkable. It shows that Shenhua's not the only one cursed when it comes to this kind of throwing money at players who don't have any motivation left. But I did say we'd move on to the Cup, so we will. We saw a lot of weakened teams put out in the Cup, surprisingly so, perhaps, because we'd spoken a bit about how the pre-drawn competition and the brackets really disincentivized some of the weaker teams from giving it a go. Turns out that having a kind of open knockout draw wasn't enough to stop League One teams and a lot of the CSL teams actually going with their reserves. I was quite surprised by this, Brandon. Am I too much of a kind of naive optimist there? Did you see this coming?
What it comes down to is you it's sort of calculating who your opponent is and what you can get away with, especially with the weekend games. At the bottom of the table in the CSL, you have a lot of teams that are pretty tight and have the potential to go down. And so it really isn't all that surprising, especially when you start to see some of the CSL clashes already at this round, this is something that you see in cup competitions everywhere in the world. It's just they're not going to be taken. It's a calculation. It's switching guys out and it's not necessarily a bad thing for the competition. I think there were plenty of exciting games. There was a lot of action. Maybe not the best quality action, but there's still decent football to be seen.
And lots of drama as well, and you hit on some good points there. This is not unique to early rounds of the Cup in China, but by any means we see it in lots of major leagues. Cam, how much of a factor do you think the midweek scheduling is and the fact that the Cup really doesn't get a lot of breathing space at this time of the season?
It doesn't help with the schedule, and also doesn't help that there's so many games crammed into such a short amount of time because of the crazy 5-week, 6-week breaks which are coming up for the national team in September and October. That makes a situation with the CFA Cup, which has always been a competition which isn't taken as seriously as it should be, and certainly in the early rounds. That situation has always existed, and it makes it worse, especially this year. But I mean, to be honest, I think it's a joke. I mean, what's the point in playing games if you're not trying to win it? I mean, it's not good for anyone. I just think that it's a game of football. I mean, it's just one. It's like one game. I mean, rotation is one thing. Letting a couple of key players rest, or you know, having a little bit of rotation is understandable. But when you're like not putting out any foreign players or basically playing a reserve team, I just think that's really disrespectful to the competition and to people who pay to watch the game.
Yeah, it's a good point, actually. There's a difference between rotation and this kind of brinksmanship of resting your entire team and the assumption that the opponent's going to do that as well. Is there anything more that can be done to incentivize teams, do you think, Brandon? Would switching the scheduling be the big thing? The open draw has come in. It doesn't seem to have helped at this point, although it does give a bit more drama in terms of fixtures to talk about.
I mean, I think what it comes down to is that, May, as it is one of the, I think, has some of the most games that you'll see all season crammed together. And on top of that, to have the cup matches wasn't the best timing. There could have been slightly better timing, but you know, what better motivation is there than a Champions League, an ACL spot for the winner? I think if you're a League One side, that it's not much of a motivation, but for the CSL sides, especially some of the mid-table sides, you know, a side like Shenzhen, not that there are a lot of mid-table sides right now, but if you're Shenzhen, if you're Chongqing, if you're one of these sides that, you know, it could offer your fans a bit of excitement, and, you know, you shouldn't be too worried about relegation. I don't understand the thinking of not trying to put together a decent run in the cup.
I think, to be fair, in this situation, this one of the things, it's not actually the CFA's fault. I think that they've got as Brandon says, they have the ACL place for the winners, which I think is as much as you could reasonably expect them to do. But of course, this conversation we're having about the CFA Cup and teams not taking it as seriously as they might, that actually, we could actually be talking about the ACL in certain cases. And one thing I would say, actually, just an interesting aside, an observation about the CFA Cup, is you see a lot of clubs, no matter the situation, unless it's a game in this quarterfinals, semis or the final, a lot of clubs always rotate the squad to some extent, and that is a good indication, it's a good proof that they, no matter who the coach is, they don't have 100% control of the team in every game.
Yeah, absolutely. It's unfortunate that this happened in early rounds, but I do think it's good to have the perspective that this competition always hots up a lot from the quarterfinals onwards, and that this is not unique to the Cup in China. And really, as we said, there's not a lot more the CFA can do. They've got a lot of the correct incentives in place. Let's look at many of the games that did actually happen and some of the results. Brandon, it seems you've got a lot of chances to pour scorn on your favourite side to hate this year, but with RNF going out to China League 2, Taizhou, there's no debate around it. RNF are officially the crisis club of the moment, right?
Well, they're one of them for sure. I think there are a couple sides, and I mean, I'd almost include Shenhua in that as well. But RNF is definitely pretty deep in their struggles. And again, this is sort of the stupidity of the competition for me, because, you know, RNF had a tough match going away to SIPG this weekend, but still, you know, they're not going to win the league and they're unlikely to go down as well. So I just can't understand why, you know, the cup gives you a chance to get pretty far, to create excitement, to win something. And I don't know why they would sort of discount that opportunity.
I think it's pretty strange. I totally agree. I mean, even another point as well is that, you know, they were playing in Shanghai and Taizhou is not far from Shanghai. So it's like they had a kind of bonus there of not having far to travel for the next game. I just don't understand why they just didn't. They obviously didn't take the game seriously. You can't play, you can't have a CCL team get knocked out by a CL2 team and there not be at least a significant element of the CCL team not taking the game as seriously as they should. They have plenty of strength and depth. I really don't think they'll be anywhere near relegation. At least they're certainly well good enough to stay up and sustain a cup run at the same time. So if I was an RF fan, I'd be sick as a parrot. I really would.
I'm not going to say anything about getting knocked out by League Two sides. I'm going to move swiftly on. One of the points of action that we did see, though, was Shenhua winning a game in Shenzhen 1-0 and then seeing that upgraded to 3-0 by, you know, Shenzhen put out a reserve team, lost, and then got disqualified for breaking the rules anyway. It's kind of a triple whammy. Is this, Cam, the first time that a team's actually broken the under-23 rules and got punished for it?
I think it is, as far as I understand. I think what it is that they thought that the under-23 rule was still tied to the number of foreigners that you have on. Because last year, of course, you had to field as many under-23s, and that is, start one under-23, and in the course of the whole match, use no fewer number of under-23s than the number of foreign players you use. That was the rule last year. But this year, you simply have to start one under-23 and you have to have used at least three by the time the game's finished. And so, Shenzhen played Shenhua in the cup, they only started one foreigner. So they must have thought, apparently they thought that they only had to play one under-23. I mean, it's quite careless by them not keeping up with the rules, but to some extent it's understandable given how fairly complicated these rules have been and how often they've changed over the years. Also, it's interesting to note that the match officials stood back and allowed Shenzhen to make the substitutions, which didn't include the requisite number of under-23s, so it's quite a strange situation all around them. But I'm actually quite surprised that it didn't happen sooner.
Yeah, it's taken us a few years to get here. I think the betting money would have been on it happening earlier. Looking at the draws for the round of 16, we do have a couple of lower league sides in there. A couple of them have got kind draws as well, Brandon. And, you know, Taizhou, having overcome RNF, they go to Tianhai, who are in all kinds of trouble themselves. And Shenxin, who've become a little bit of cup experts in recent seasons, are at home to the other Tianjin side as well. Do you think that either of those two are going to carry on the romance of the lower league sides, or perhaps we could see one of the other teams with their tricky away trips pulling off an upset?
I mean, honestly, at this point, it's nearly impossible to say, just because it's so difficult to predict what kind of sides the teams are going to play in the match. What I can predict is that we're definitely going to see some upsets. That seems to be a given in the competition. But who is going to upset who and where is hard to predict. At the same time, it's crazy that now we're going to have two rounds of the cup, both played in May, adding to the already congested fixture as it is, and even more so for the teams that are in the ACL, who are going to end up, I think, playing 8 games in the month of May.
Yeah, some crazy fixture build-up. A couple of the ties that stand out to me is quite tasty, Cam. Both Jiangsu Shandong and Shenhua Chongqing sees you know, half-decent CSL sides coming up against each other. Could be some dark horses to kind of go deep in the tournament there. Do you think any of them are going to start really prioritising this and putting strong teams out, or are we going to see more of this kind of, you know, game of chicken and how many of your reserves can you throw in there?
I think Brandon hit the nail right on the head. It's just because of the issues we've just been discussing, it's very difficult to predict. To that regard, he kind of makes you wonder, what does shock actually mean in the FA Cup, the CFA Cup? I mean, it's not shocking anymore that CL2 teams are beating CSL teams. Or at least it's not as shocking as it was. So I don't know. Another thing, which is, to people at home listening, they don't know that me and Steve had this conversation online about Shenhua. Basically, cut a long story short, Shenhua were drawn against Shenzhen in the previous round in the cup. And as luck would have it, Shenhua...
Oh, we're not going to get into the maths.
No, we're not going to talk about the maths, but we've got to explain this to everybody. So Shenhua drawn against Shenzhen in the CFA Cup in Shenzhen, and coincidentally, they were also playing Shenzhen just 4 or 5 days later in the league. So they just stayed in Shenzhen, and of course... That happens sometimes. There's nothing particularly outrageously unlikely about that. But then in the next round, the exact same thing is going to happen with Shenhua and Chongqing. And again, the game will take place at the same stadium just days apart. First time in the cup and second time in the league. And I'm no mathematician, and I know that sometimes coincidences are actually not as unlikely as commonly believed. But I do wonder if anybody is out there, I'm very, very keen to have someone who knows what they're doing to sit down, work out the maths and tell us what is the actual probability, what are the odds of two teams from the same league getting drawn in the cup, then playing each other in the league days later, then in the next round, exact same thing happens again. So if you're out there and you're a maths boffin, then please let us know.
For the record, I made, I think, just over 3% for the first one of those and 0.065 or something like that afterwards, but my conditional probability is a bit ropey, so listeners, please jump in and continue to enthrall us in this far too long conversation that Cam and I have been having today.
Yeah, and Brandon quite rightly said this is far too early on a Monday morning for me to be facing this kind of mathematical conundrum.
Yes. Indeed.
I like that one.
Well, from a little bit of mathematical nonsense with some big numbers thrown around, I do want to wrap up with one final listener question from Will on the topic of Alexis Sanchez and his wages. There are rumours going around that the Chilean, who's having a lousy time at Man United, is the latest to be linked with unnamed Chinese club in the media. Do either of you think it's possible that Evergrande could look at him to replace Talisca? I mean, given what we've just said about them, this is presumably, Brandon, a non-starter of a rumour, right?
I mean, does Evergrande have transfer places left? Because they brought in 3 foreigners, in theory. I mean, 2 of them are going to be naturalized, but they brought in 3 foreigners in the transfer window. So I don't think Evergrande has any transfer places left. They don't have any room to move, I don't think. Domestic or foreign players. I'm not sure.
Can they not bring in 5 foreigners over the course of a season? I think that... No, it used to be. God knows if it changed or not. I don't know.
I always thought it used to be 3, but I'm not sure. Again, it's sort of these rules are all over the place. I mean, if they do have a spot, I mean, Sanchez would in theory sort of make sense. They need sort of a quality player. His caliber would work well in the CSL. But I think that's he's not exactly the guy to replace Talisca. I think they'd be looking elsewhere.
Yeah, so we've had enough, I think, South Americans whose legs have gone and who are just not motivated to do anything other than earn big paychecks anymore and not mentioning any names. But the CSL has had many of that kind of player. With the confusion over the rules, I feel a little bit like we're the Shenzhen bench at the moment. I'm going to sit here like the fourth official and just let the madness continue. But it's been, as always, a nice wide-ranging discussion this week, guys. I think we're going to draw a line under it here. All that remains to be done is to thank both of you, as always, for joining us. Brandon, we'll let you continue to kind of gloat on that table topping start to the season. Thanks for your input, as always.
Yeah, you know, we had so much to talk about. We didn't. This coming weekend is probably one of the most exciting weekends of the season. You look at the fixture list. So everyone enjoy the football,
and we will enjoy talking about it next week. I can't believe how much you mentioned League Two teams knocking top flight teams out of the cup, Cam.
Yeah, it's kind of cathartic in a way, but Thanks, everyone. And remember, 1+1=3 in Chinese football.
Still too soon for me on all of those fronts. And then the only last thing that remains to be said is thank you, as always, listeners, for sticking with us through the podcast. We do hope you get enjoyment from listening to us. And it would mean a lot and help us out greatly if you could rate, write a review, share the podcast, or even chip in on our Patreon page. That is your lot for this week. We'll be back to look back on some of those Champions League fixtures and League Ones that Brandon has nicely set up there. But for this week, this has been your Chinese Football Podcast, brought to you by Wild East Football, and I've been your host, Steve Crooks.
The Chinese Football Podcast, brought to you by Wild East Football.
全场比赛结束了，我们终于出现了。